Hey, everyone. There are a couple of webinars coming up at Renegade University that are very popular and I thought you should know about. First, beginning on January 5th, that's a Tuesday, we have Postmodernism, Critical Theory, and American Politics, co-taught by James Lindsay and me. Many of you know James from his appearance on Unregistered several months ago. James has made quite a name for himself as a critic of postmodernism and critical theory. He and I have a lot of fundamental disagreements on many of the core issues in those schools of thought. So this will be unique among university seminars. We will have not just a dialogue, we will also have an ongoing debate for the three Tuesdays this webinar is meeting. Those are the first three Tuesdays in January. We're going to have to cap this very soon because it's selling out very fast. We want to make sure that everyone has the chance to participate fully in the webinar. So get your tickets soon. Go to renegadeuniversity.com. You'll see it under video courses or just scroll down to the bottom of the screen there. Also, beginning in the last Tuesday of January, January 26th, we will have another three-part webinar taught by Kamasi Hill. It's called Talkin' Shit, The History of Hip-Hop. Hotep Jesus has already registered as a student. We have many people who are going to take this as well. We will also have to cap that. So again, go to renegadeuniversity.com and get your tickets now. Thanks. This is the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. This is a show about ideas, people, and behaviors that are considered inappropriate, out of bounds, or beyond the pale. The things you're not supposed to talk about if you're a school teacher, a college professor, a businessman, a politician, a parent, a neighbor, or even a podcast host. These are the things you're not supposed to say or even think if you're a good liberal, a good conservative, or a good citizen. Each week, I'll interview a person who has something bad to say. They might be a journalist or a professor. They might be a porn star or a drug dealer. They might just be an ordinary person with an ordinary job who doesn't care about the rules of polite society. I'm not interested in breaking the rules just to be a troublemaker. I'm interested in people who break the rules of conventional thought and to expand the scope of what is possible to say in our society. I'm interested in people who make me think. Over the last 6 years, one company has changed my life, and I am honored to announce that they are now a sponsor of the Unregistered Podcast. To get your free one-month trial to Headspace, the mindfulness meditation app, go to headspace.com/renegade. It is estimated that in the United States, there are 400 million legally registered firearms. That does not count, of course, the do-it-yourself and 3D printed guns, which might number also in the hundreds of millions. My guests this week are responsible for much of the proliferation of do-it-yourself guns, so I had them on the show to convince me that that's a good thing. This is my interview with Control Pew, Jeff Rodriguez, and Ivan. So I am joined from all around the country, from undisclosed locations, by three gentlemen who have been recommended to me by many people on Twitter as the three leading experts on 3D printing of guns. And I knew very little about this until I interviewed Cody Wilson. And now I want to know more, because now I'm interested even more in guns for reasons we can get into. But I want to tell you, so this is, we have Control Pew, and we have Jeff Rodriguez, and we have Ivan, who is off screen. He did not want to have his face videotaped for good reasons. So let's just get into it. I'm going to tell you guys who I am, first of all. I am a cowardly sissy from a deep blue state background. I have lived my entire life in the San Francisco Bay Area, New York City, and Los Angeles. I had just a brief moment only part-time in Oregon, which was the only time I had any experience with people who owned guns, because I didn't live in Portland. I lived in real Oregon. But other than that, I have spent my whole life being afraid of, and really, I got to admit to you, hating guns. So you're here to fix that for me. You guys are experts on this stuff. You're obviously big enthusiasts in this world. I want to hear, first of all, who you are and, you know, tell us as much as you can, and we'll just go around the horn here. So Jeff, why don't you just tell us, like, what's your background, and why are you into this?
Yeah, sure. I'm a software engineer. That's kind of my 9-to-5 deal. I've been kind of into guns since I was a kid. You know, my grandparents had acreage and I was around them and shot them, you know, out probably way younger than I should have been, and with not as much training and all that. But, you know, that turned out okay. And then many years later, you know, as an adult, really got into, you know, just shooting as a hobby, and started reading more and more about history, and to a certain extent, and a little, you know, I learned some lessons about World War II and things like that, and about how, you know, bad things can come for you, and even your own governments can come for you. So, you know, that sent me down this, you know, kind of, let's call it prepper-ish road, you know, survivalist prepper world. You know, set up some meetups around that world, and gardening people and gun people. There's a lot of overlap there, actually.
How long have you been doing this? When did you start?
I got into building my first gun in 2014, like the end of 2014.
Okay. So it's not a lifelong passion. It's relatively new, I guess.
At least as far as printing and making my own, and like making that something other people can do more easily.
Yeah.
I'll let these guys talk more, but like, yeah, things have gotten a lot nicer and better as far as DIY world goes. It was kind of the dark ages when I first started, as far as printing goes and as far as DIY guns go, for sure.
I guess you couldn't really be into this before about 2014 anyway, right?
I had a printer, but it was not, that was a struggle. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. When did, is Cody like the man for you guys? Did he sort of start a lot of this for you? Or Jeff?
I would say he's probably put it in the forefront for me anyway, of, hey, you can 3D print this. You know, it's always been the, and Ivan can attest to this, there's this meme that any guy can make a gun in his garage. You know, that's sort of true, but that gun sucks. And you probably can't make it, and, you know, and on and on. So one of the things I wanted to do was improve on that. And so now it's a lot better than it was. And especially these days with the current state of the art is really impressive, like to the point where people are, you know, it's comparable to a real quote unquote, you know, factory firearm.
Well, I've looked at all three of your websites and they are very impressive as to what you guys are, I guess, producing yourselves or teaching other people to produce, all kinds of guns and even things bigger than guns. Right. And you, Jeff, in particular, you have a lot of stuff that's bigger than guns, like handheld guns.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. There's, I would say, what's probably the most popular thing right now, what Ivan and crew are working on, is what we call like a pistol caliber carbine, or a, you know, be a large pistol. I'm working on shotguns. And then kind of the joke is that I'm into 3D printed nukes.
Right.
That's more of a statement about how far I think, you know, your rights can go or should go. You know, it's like, how serious are you? Well, if I can 3D print nukes, you know.
Yeah. So, your claim to fame is the Liberator, is that right?
Yeah, Liberator 12K.
12K
is.
And tell, what's that?
Oh, sorry. So the current kind of one that most people know is a 12 gauge revolver. It's a 6-shot 12 gauge revolver. And as far as this week and, you know, this month, I've been really getting close to the end of development here, where I'm shooting what you would call like the gold standard for self-defense, which is double op buckshot and slugs, which is, it's pretty serious. It's, as far as self-defense goes, it's pretty serious.
Why is that the gold standard for self-defense?
So it, frankly, it packs a lot of punch. Like the kind of weapons you would use to hunt, let's say a deer size animal, is about approximately the same you'd use to hunt a person, not hunt a person, but, you know, defend yourself.
Take it easy, person. Jeff.
Yeah. Right.
Defend yourself against an attacking person is what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You know, most dangerous game. But no, it's, you know, inside of a house, a 12 gauge shotgun with double op buckshot is a very formidable weapon.
That's what you would recommend I should get first?
I don't know about first. There's been some things said about that. There's something to be said for having practice and familiarity first. But kind of the thing is, you know, you can't buy a lot of the ammo out there. I don't think you can buy 22 ammo, which is what I would start you on right now. And you can't buy, you know, I don't know if you can buy 9mm at all. It's out, not out there. You can probably roll into Big Five and pick up some 12 gauge shotgun ammo. It'll be for hunting turkeys, but you can modify it. So it will definitely do the job at home.
You're talking about the great state of California.
Even in California, you could probably roll into any Big Five or Walmart right now and buy 12 gauge shotgun ammo that, if modified, would protect you in a home invasion. It's kind of my scenario.
All right. Some people have told me to get an AR-15 first.
Not a bad choice. The debate rages on, right? It's one of those holy war type things, but that both good options.
So I did not touch a gun until 5 years ago. And it was a 22 caliber rifle. Mm-hmm. And it felt to me like a bomb exploding in my hands. So I did everything right. I didn't like have the scope like up against my eye. So I didn't get, you know, that thing happened to beginners, but it was a terrifying experience. So I need something that's not going to be so scary. Oddly enough, the AR I've told has less, what is it, recoil or something?
Than a 12 gauge. Yeah, that is absolutely.
Well, than a 12 gauge for sure. Yeah. Okay. What is your take on the current situation culturally, socially, politically, and what do you think right now, and how does this impact on about the world, and how does this impact on what you're doing?
I mean, I've been at this since, like I said, 2014, printing actually since like October 2014. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's been more than just one presidency that I've been at this. And I'm I'm in the anarchist kind of, you know, bent to things. So that the climate of things now doesn't affect me nearly as much as, you know, most people and whatnot. I'm in the, 2020, let's end this lockdown business kind of thing. Like, we're destroying people's lives and there's more to live for than yada, yada, yada.
Oh no, there's nothing more to live for. Come on. Then compliance.
Oh yeah, the whole point of life is to make it to the end.
I thought it was to comply with authority. That's what I was told anyway.
Oh. But I'm pretty sure I was told that too.
Yeah, so okay, so you're anarchistic. You've been doing this through multiple presidencies. You got a new one coming up maybe, probably. And so you're in it for the long game. You're playing the long game here.
Yeah, so this started out originally kind of as a I call it like a political art project, right? Like I said, that gun that you can make that any guy, quote unquote, can make in his garage sucks. So I wanted to improve that. And when I started this, that was the state of the art. And it comes from 1972, 73, improvised munitions manual the Army put out. And that's how bad the state of the art was at the time. And now it's a lot better.
Tell me about your arsenal. What do you own?
Oh man. So factory guns or what I've made? I actually probably own more guns that I've made now than factory guns.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's, and we'll get into this. There's a difference between what we would call like, you know, factory parts. Ivan, I think, has a better terminology for this, but like, you know, parts you can buy or a gun you can buy from manufacturer, right? An FFL, you go through all the checks and all that, you get your whatever. But now, you know, you can buy parts and you can make guns from those parts that aren't necessarily registered. So this is the whole like quote unquote ghost gun thing, which is basically an unregistered, you know, it didn't go through the FFL process and end up with a serial number on it. Right.
There's nothing I like better than an unregistered gun. I just want to put that out there. See, that's why you guys are on the show.
I'm a fan of the term undocumented myself, but unregistered will also do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Appreciate your vote of confidence about the title of my podcast here. Fascinating. We will get back to you. Control Pew. I take it that's not your legal name.
Not my legal name. Legal name is Alex.
Okay.
No, I'm already well doxxed. I run an LLC and do merch and monetizing a couple things for the community. So I'm already well out there. Yeah.
So what's your background and how did you get into this and why?
Well, right. So coming out of high school, I was always in the sort of alternate tech space. I was paying attention to Things like Bitcoin and the early 3D printing and the the sort of lead up to that. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. And so I my studies were always focused on high tech applications. So electronics engineering, software development, things of that nature. And then my brother took me, because he joined the military, so he took me to a shooting range one summer, and I was in love with it. It was the best thing ever. Shot a full auto MP5. It was like the third gun I picked up that day. It was wonderful. And I've been chasing that ever since. So coming into adulthood, I joined the military, got more exposure to more firearms. I went in as a logistics specialist. So I also had a large role in the armory and dealing with all of the weapons that we ever had. So I got really intimate with all the inner workings of all the mechanisms of all of the really fun stuff that I don't get to have anymore. And that was sort of it. I came out of the military. I was like, hey, I want a machine gun. Oh, I can't have a machine gun. Well, dang. And here I am. I saw the Defense Distributed Liberator video back in 2013. And that was that point where I was like, okay, I can marry this one thing that I'm passionate about with high tech engineering with this other thing that I'm passionate about, which is firearms. And I don't have to go to a trade school and get a job at Smith & Wesson to do it, or any of the other things that you would normally do to get into the gun industry. I can just do this at home in my living room. And that's that. So years go by.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
Years go by. I find out about the FOSCAD group and Deterrence Dispensed while they were on Reddit still. And then they got banned from Reddit. And, I was hanging around the group, sort of lurking in the background. Somebody said, hey, High Point parts kits are on sale for $30. So a bunch of us grabbed them. And then it was, okay, well, is someone going to make this? And no one did. So, a week goes by, 2 weeks. I was like, well, I guess I'll do it. So I sat down with a pair of calipers and started to go to work. And that was my indoctrination into the community, I guess.
Okay. I should have asked this of Jeff. So I'll ask it of you first and then Jeff and then Ivan. So why is it that you love guns so much? What was it about that experience at the shooting range with your brother? Yeah. Can you put words to those feelings that you had? Why the love? Because it scared the shit out of me, as I told you. So we had totally different experiences. Maybe I will love it the next time I do it.
I think, God, that's a hard one. I've never actually thought about that before.
It's the most important question.
Right?
Alex?
I guess from the sort of teenager sort of initial, we all love fireworks when we're kids. And it's sort of that same sort of emotional response, that sort of awestruck at the display, I guess. I think now that I'm a little older, it's probably more of a, we've gotten a little bit into the philosophical end of it and the more sort of evolved state of these things can be, how do I put this in words? It's a tool that is, it's like the manifestation of my will or someone else's, whoever's holding the thing. It's an extension of that. And so we get into the, well, what if, people use it? Well, bad people will use it for bad things. Good people will use it for good things. And we can sort of continue on that trail of like half put together ideas that I haven't quite thought about for a while. So.
Well, I recommend to all three of you that you put a lot of thought to this question because your enemies have answers to it for you, right? They know why, or they think they know why you guys are into guns. So you do need to answer this. How about you, Jeff?
Well, I mean, I was just in a discussion today. It's all about the dicks, right? This is a substitute for a dick.
Right. I was waiting for one of you guys to say it, but yeah, yes. Because my dick's tiny, that's why I like guns.
I'm sorry. What are you guys saying about your dicks? I'm sorry, I missed this.
Well, we have lots of guns, so we don't have dicks at all.
I think it's as the Asian in the room, I can confirm this.
Yeah, it's a phallus proxy or whatever that guy said.
Yes, it's a phallus proxy.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you that's probably not going to sell too well in the mass media. So why don't you give it another shot, Jeff? Why do you like guns so much?
Well, I mean, there's different angles to it. So, I mean, for one, they're kind of the great equalizer, right? There's mm-hmm. There's called proverbs in the gun world. I'm not a religious person myself, but the saying goes, God made man, Sam Colt made them all equal. I'm a big guy. So, you know, I'm familiar with that. If someone's smaller and generally weaker than me, like, you know, I can play around with friends and all that. And I'm going to get my way. Right. And that's just, I'm just a bigger guy. And you put a tiny little pistol in one of their hands. That's a whole different story.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think one of the things people don't appreciate, like, you know, one of the things you run across is, I would grab my bat, you know, and I would beat the intruders to death. Like, this is a distinction without a difference, if you ask me. Like, okay, you're still getting violence. You just don't want to project your violence over a distance. You want to get up close and more personal. Is that better? I don't know.
Right.
I'm all about the self-defense these days. Like, I think that's what drives me. I'm not big on the concept of rights, but, you know, to go through that lens, I think self-defense is a human right. It's a human imperative. It's up to you to defend yourself in the same way that, you know, lion has teeth or bull has horns. Guns are the same thing for people. You have brains and it's up to you to defend yourself.
Who or what are you most concerned about?
With where I live, I'm not too worried about, you know, like crime, for instance. I've been a long time concealed carry kind of guy, but, realistically I was talking about this earlier to some friends. I looked at the gun stats and it's not me who's at risk. If you look at, you know, gun deaths, half of those are suicides and the other most are inner city black kids.
Right.
Right. Like this is drug war fallout. Yep. So realistically the likelihood that I'm going to need a gun to protect myself from someone is kind of low. It's out there, but you know, kind of low. Mm-hmm. But no, I think nation states are, you know, they killed millions of people, right? Like our own government, right? Nuked, you know, how many people?
That was after they firebombed and killed millions. But yeah, the nukes were just the final touch, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mwah, right. Like, yeah. Yeah. I'm worried, if anything, more about that than any common criminal or thief, but
about a tyrannical government is what you're worried about.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Alex, Control Pew, is that true for you too? Or
I don't think a government could survive the fallout of that, of something so dramatic like napalming a city. But then I think back to our history about, you know, didn't they bomb Oklahoma some 50 years ago? So I don't know. It's a little thing. It's there. I think it's necessary. I hope it never comes to it.
But is that your motivation?
Not me personally. It's there. It doesn't drive me.
Gotcha. 6 years ago, I was in deep psychological trouble. I was experiencing severe anxiety, panic disorder, and a tremendous amount of insomnia. I had been in psychotherapy for more than 10 years at that point, had spent tens of thousands of dollars on psychotherapy, and it had never actually made me feel any better. So a friend of mine recommended this mindfulness meditation app called Headspace. And I have to admit, for a couple of years, I resisted using it. But I finally did. The very first time I meditated with Headspace, it felt like the chemistry in my body changed for the better. I've never experienced anything like it. But even better than that, I use Headspace and its teachings all day long. It has trained me to be focused and centered in my body and in my breath, and to let thoughts and ideas that cause stress and anxiety and depression and insomnia to float by like clouds. In fact, countless scientific studies have shown that untold numbers of people have reduced their anxiety, depression, and insomnia by mindfully meditating on a regular basis, just the way that Headspace offers. So please go to headspace.com/renegade for your free 1 month trial, which is exactly how I started. It's how I changed my life with that free trial. Go there again, headspace.com/renegade, free 1 month trial. And I can virtually guarantee that you'll feel better. One more time, go to headspace.com/renegade for your free 1 month trial. Thank you so much. All right, Ivan, the faceless Ivan, the mysterious Ivan. Let's talk about you.
Sure.
Your title comes with, you have a PhD in your title. Is that a real thing or is that a joke?
So it's a joke, and that comes from there's been multiple instances, and it is probably to the surprise of no one. Most of those instances have come from the wonderful website known as Reddit, where people who obviously don't have factual information about printed guns, and this usually takes the form of it's going to blow up in your hand and blow your hand off, or it's going to maim you in this way, or it costs, the printer to print one costs like a bajillion dollars, or just like they'll throw out like weird outdated information that probably wasn't ever actually true in the first place. And they'll stand behind this like it's absolute fact, and when challenged with opposing evidence, so you can share them a video of you running a mag as quickly as you can through a gun that's been printed, they'll back up on the fact that they have a degree in something that's not at all related to making guns and generally not at all related to 3D printing. So they'll be like, right, well, I'm a mechanical engineer and I've worked with a 3D printer and I can tell you that this, that's impossible after watching a video of it just happening, which is like a real head scratcher. So that sort of became a meme, and that's where my current title on Twitter is Ivan Al No Handy, and so that's where the Al No Handy is. Of course, I've blown my hands off millions of times because all of these very educated people have told me that's what must have happened. But there was one particular individual who had a PhD in mechanical engineering, and they were adamant about the fact that you could not use a 3D printer to print a gun. And normally, once you reveal to them, and I guess probably we should have led with this, was in the United States, there's only one part of a firearm that's actually regulated as a firearm. So on an AR-15, of course, there's lots and lots of parts, but only the lower receiver is federally regulated as the firearm. Everything else, as far as regulation is concerned, is just spare parts. So upper receiver, barrel, trigger parts, it's all just spare parts to them.
So I didn't know that.
Legally, only that lower receiver is the firearm. So for essentially anyone living in the U.S., with the exception of a couple states, the only thing that you would even need to print or pay attention to is the lower receiver of something like an AR-15. So usually whenever these people are like, well, no, you can't print guns, you'll blow your hands off, you'll show them a video and they'll be like, well, look, you only printed the one part which is legally considered a firearm. And, so they'll pivot to the point that, like, well, I want to see an entire gun be printed, which obviously isn't extremely feasible because there's a lot easier ways to make most parts besides printing them. In some cases, just some parts aren't feasible, don't lend themselves to being printed. But this person particularly pivoted to, there's no way you could print the lower receiver on an AR-15 in a video of me dumping a mag as quickly as I could through an AR-15 that had a printed lower receiver. And this individual, stood behind their PhD trying to say, like, well, this is impossible, I've used a printer. And, they went on for days doing this. They were in my mentions for days. So I decided that because I had so thoroughly dunked on this PhD that I've stolen their PhD, and that is now my title and not theirs.
Oh, you scalped them.
Yes, they have been scalped. That's mine now. You no longer have your wall hanger that says you know something, because clearly you don't.
Got it. All right, guys, tell me this. What is a lower receiver?
So on an AR-15... And on many firearms designed after the AR-15, to my knowledge, AR-15 is one of the first guns to ever be set up like this. Not the first, there's others, but it's definitely the most popular and the most present today. They've got receivers, and generally speaking, receivers on firearms are just core structural components that hold the various other parts together. So for AR-15s, they've put those receivers into an upper and a lower. On much older firearms, and even up to firearms designed just before the AR-15, and this is where the AR-15 we're talking was designed late 50s into the early 60s. So firearms designed much before that just had a receiver. And so everything, all the accoutrements, all the other parts of the gun were built off of this receiver. So the receiver sort of acted as the backbone of the gun, where all of the ribs and organs end up hanging off of it.
Okay.
So the AR-15 sort of shook this design methodology up, where it had an upper and a lower receiver. So the upper receiver held, you know, the parts that go on the upper half of the gun, and the lower receiver held the parts that go on the lower half of the gun. And then those two receivers are pinned together. And then once they're pinned together, you've got yourself your, you know, your whole shebang, the whole setup's there. So on an AR-15, your lower receiver ends up holding your magazine in place, and ends up holding your trigger parts in place, and ends up holding your recoil spring assembly in place.
Okay.
Meanwhile, the upper receiver ends up holding your bolt carrier, your barrel, and your whole gas system. So from a design standpoint, the upper receiver is doing a whole lot of heavy lifting, specifically the whole upper receiver group. So everything that's mounted to the upper receiver. So your barrel and your bolt carrier group, those are the ones that are exposed to, like, the full pressure of a round being fired. So those are the ones that see a lot higher pressure. Meanwhile, the lower receiver parts don't really see so much pressure, but what they are responsible for are the very finicky things about a firearm. So the things that have to be very, very precise in order to make it cycle reliably, such as where the magazine sits, magazine placement, the magazine itself, as well as fire control parts need to be fairly precise, especially in comparison to everything that goes on in the upper receiver in terms of machining and mechanical tolerances. Don't have to be as close as a lot of the things on the lower receiver. So the lower receiver on an AR-15, because it doesn't have any of those pressure-bearing components, is much easier not only to make at home, but to 3D print as part of being easy to make at home. And because the government, the feds, specifically the ATF, decided that the lower receiver of an AR-15 was the one to be regulated, after the assault weapons ban expired in 2004, AR-15 sort of saw this huge spike in popularity, and part of that was due to the fact that you can, traditionally the way this was done is you would just go to your local gun shop and buy a lower receiver just on its own.
Okay.
And if you buy a completed lower receiver from a gun shop, you go through a background check, you go through all of that normal process you do to get a gun. But then online, you could order all of the other parts, and so you could mix and match and sort of pick the different parts you want, and it becomes like an adult Lego set because they're all made to the same pattern. So you can buy a barrel from this guy, from this, outfit, and then a handguard from this outfit, and a sight from this outfit, and lower parts kit from this outfit, and then sort of cobble them all together. And then, once you've already got a completed receiver, it's very easy to do, to put an AR-15 together like that. Okay. And so it is a lot like adult Legos. So that level of customizability drew a lot of people in.
Okay.
So that's sort of the long and short of what an AR-15 lower is and what it means.
Okay. So first of all, I am convinced that you totally deserve a PhD. Second of all, I want to just be really clear about this, because I'm still hazy even after interviewing Cody, because we mostly talked about philosophy and stuff
right.
in that interview. But the legality of these things. So
right.
You're saying that you said that the federal government only regulates the lower receiver on an AR-15, and that's just one example for one gun, right? So right. In other words, once you assemble the whole, is it then legal and unregulated if you put it all together and you have a functioning AR-15 in your house?
So federally speaking, there's no restriction on if you make a gun yourself. And specifically, they define that as firearm. And like we just discussed, the firearm is the one particular part on any given gun that they define as the firearm. So an AR-15 is the lower. So if you go and buy a lower that's already been completed, so you buy a complete ready-to-assemble lower from a gun shop, that's already considered a firearm, just that lower, and you'd have to go through a background check to get it. But if you were to go and make that lower receiver yourself, and there's several different routes to go about that, probably in order from least common to most common, probably least common is just making an entire lower receiver from scratch. So you just take like a hunk of metal and then use a mill and expensive machining equipment to make a lower receiver from scratch. Probably next least common would be you can buy raw forgings, and raw forgings are just like, instead of it being a great big block of metal, it's just an undefined block of metal in the shape of an AR-15 lower. So that saves you some machining. Some people do that route. Probably next least common is there's like a company that sells molds that you can do. So like there's like a mold you can buy that you can then pour resin inside. And once that resin hardens, it hardens in the shape of an AR-15 lower.
Mm.
Then moving up the chain, probably the next most common would be 3D printing. So with 3D printing AR-15 lowers, you just set up your 3D printer, you get the the code loaded onto the printer, and you hit print and come back about 20 hours later, and it will have spit out, it'll have supports on it, and it'll have some cleanup to do, and you have to, clean up, make sure all the holes are round on it, mm-hmm. but it will have spit out an AR-15 lower receiver. And then in doing those steps, and this is true for all the other methods I've described so far, you have manufactured that, you have made that firearm yourself in your own home.
Okay.
And federally speaking, it's completely legal to do that. Wow. So long as you don't manufacture a firearm. So the Fed defines manufacturing a firearm as whenever you make a firearm with intent to transfer it.
Okay.
And then you define transferring it as you intend to sell it, you intend to trade it, you intend to give it to somebody, you intend to do essentially anything with it that isn't just keep it for yourself.
Okay.
So that's how they end up defining transfer. So as long as whenever you make it, your intent isn't to transfer it, you're not manufacturing. And so you don't need a license if you're not manufacturing. So you can make as many guns as you want, hundreds of them, as long as they're for personal use and your intent isn't to transfer.
I did not.
And I guess it is then worth mentioning the most common way of people making their own AR-15s at home is what's known as 80% receivers. And this has been a little bit controversial in the gun world because it's something that Biden is going to have the ATF come down hard on if he can. And what 80% receivers are is sort of like a weird product of the post-assault weapons ban era, where somebody brought an AR-15 lower receiver that had been most of the way machined, but there was still some machining, so like with a mill and a drill left to do on it. Mm-hmm. And he brought it to the ATF and said, look, this isn't all the way done. There's no way you could make this fire. Is this a firearm? So it's got most of the machining done, but not all of it. You could not put all the parts on it and make it fire around, but it's close to that point. So he brought it to the ATF, asked, does this count as a firearm? And eventually this individual asked the ATF with the right combination of things not completed on this receiver. And the ATF said, look, this is no longer a firearm. And so, as a marketing term, it was called an 80% receiver, as though 80% of the machining was done and there's just 20% left for you to do. Although in reality, it's a lot closer to like a 95% of the work is done and there's just 5% more work for you to do, because 80% receivers don't have a whole lot of difficult machining left on them. It's all, square angle, fairly easy to do machining. And there's different companies that sell jigs that make it so you can essentially just take a drill press and a router, so simple, very simple metalworking tools, and use those tools to machine out, remove the last little bit of aluminum from an 80% receiver. That would then take it from being not a firearm to being a firearm. So a lot of people end up doing that because it's fairly cost effective. It's not as cost effective as 3D printing them, but the end result is obviously going to be stronger than printing them because you're making this out of aluminum. And that's been very popular for some time. However, the push from the Biden administration is going to be to have the ATF regulate 80% receivers as though they were completed firearms. Mm. And probably the way that that's just going to go is somebody ends up coming up with a 75% receiver and then a 70% receiver.
Right.
So there's only ever going to be, because in the eyes of the ATF, the way the law sets this up to work is something is either a firearm or it's not a firearm. And there has to be a distinct point when it stops being a firearm and it starts being a firearm. And, if we take this to, ad absurdum, the 0% AR-15 receiver is that least common type of way of making your own receiver that I described, where you just take a literal block of aluminum. I mean, with enough time and energy, that little block of aluminum becomes a firearm. So it's a firearm precursor part. So, if you took this all the way to the most absurd definition of what is and isn't a firearm, all blocks of aluminum big enough to become a AR-15 lower are now firearms. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of where that 80% receiver drama ends up going.
Okay. So I did not know this. So you're saying that homemade guns, so long as you keep them for yourself, are perfectly legal according to federal law. Is this right?
According to federal law, correct. And so then, so then that begs the question, what about state laws?
And cities too, right?
In cities too, though I'm not aware of any particular cities that preempt state law one direction or the other. I am aware of course, there's California, of course, makes it hard. New York, I believe, makes it hard.
Yeah.
I think Rhode Island does now too. And I know Delaware was pretending that they were going to do it, and I'm not sure if they passed it or not.
So Jeff, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff. Can you talk a little bit about the state regulations? Like, what can do you know? Can you guys go through the various states? And
I'm not sure specifically what states. I do know California. I want to say California has something going on it. In general, let's say New England is going to be, you know, going to make your life difficult there. I don't know beyond those two as far as specifics go.
Even with homemade guns, you keep it home.
They're specifically very interested in like what we would call ghost guns, the 80%. That's what they consider a ghost gun, right? So when he holds up that AR, this is a ghost gun. It's an 80% receiver, aluminum receiver that someone had finished.
Right.
And of course, there's no serial on it because you did it at home. As far as like states, I'm not aware of anything too specific beyond, you know, California does have something. I don't live in California, so thank goodness. But yeah, it varies by state. But the general rule is that if you can own a gun, you can make a gun. You know, your state laws vary, but if you can own one, you can make one.
I did not know that.
For yourself, yeah.
Okay. Alex, do you have anything to add to that? Do you know about state regulations?
I was saying, owning one and making one, that applies to anywhere except New England and California. Uh-huh. California is just a hot mess. No one can negotiate it, not even the people who are, like, paid to do it.
Yeah.
And like California, you have to submit paperwork to get a serial number to put on your firearm before you make the firearm.
Oh my God.
You can't, you can't buy the parts to make it before you get the serial number, and their state doesn't actually like give them out at all. It's exceptionally difficult to get them.
It's almost prohibitive, it sounds like.
Right. There's so much regulation that it's almost just, it's nearly impossible. Okay. Similar stories out of New York and New Jersey. Maryland had a discussion on the book. I don't know if they passed the law. And I do know Rhode Island has banned the home manufacture of firearms without serial numbers.
Hmm.
So ghost guns by non-FFLs.
Okay, so I need to move out of California is what you guys are saying.
So there's an interesting tidbit about that, though. So California passed, I believe, in 2016, this law that made it so if you wanted to make your own, you know, firearm there, you have to ask permission of the Department of Justice there, and they'll give you a serial number if they feel like it. So since passing that, California has seen the largest spike anywhere across the country. It's totally disproportionate to anywhere in the country.
Oh.
The largest spike of unserialized firearms being recovered in crime.
Oh yeah.
I mean, who could have imagined this?
Right.
But it's something like, the figures that anti-gun organizations were touting around, what it was, almost one in three firearms in large cities in California are unserialized or homemade or 80%, you know, the result of 80% build. And I guess I should have mentioned there's 80% receivers for things besides AR-15. There's 80% AKs and Glocks and SIGs and 1911s, you name it.
This is the most stressful and anxiety-making moment in my lifetime. This, of course, is not news to anybody, really. But it is why I strongly recommend that you buy some CBD and that you get it from a company whose cause you believe in and who's going to give you a great deal. And that company is the wonderful unregistered sponsor, Paloma Verde CBD. Owned and operated by Carlos and Vanessa Abelar out of San Antonio, Texas, they love unregistered listeners so much that they're continuing to give us discounts that you will not find anywhere else. 25% off every single item in their store. If you join their mailing list, you get another 10% off. So if it's your first order, that will be 35% off. Also, they put together my three favorite Paloma Verde products into what's called the Unregistered Combo Pack, also known as the THAAD Pack, which is their number one selling product, I am so proud to say. That includes their soft gels. I take 2 to 6 of these per day. 25 milligrams of CBD in each soft gel. Their wonderful tincture, this is my favorite, high potency, a few drops under your tongue, and for me, my anxiety melts away. The third part of the THAAD pack I can't show you because I ran out of it once again. It's their gummies, 10 milligrams of CBD per gummy. They're just so good. They taste like delicious candy, and I go through them so fast, I often don't have a jar to show. Go to PalomaVerdeStore.com, use the discount code RENEGADE, buy some CBD, help your body, help your mind, help your mood, and I thank you.
There's a very specific definition of what a firearm is, which is how we got this 80% you know receiver world, and that so basically that definition doesn't fit well. So is this what in the 30s for the NFA and the 68 for the Gun Control Act? Mm-hmm. So these are old, and I mean the 30s predates the AR-15, right? So this. You know, that basically ATF, and I kind of, part of me is like, well, I kind of understand. The ATF basically is handed these definitions and like, okay, apply it to this thing that doesn't apply to at all. If you, this is one of the interesting, potentially interesting parts about the law is that the law might not actually cover an AR-15. Not really, like, you know, when you get in front of a judge and you really nitpicky about what does that word mean? Does that really match the definition of a firearm? If it doesn't really match the definition of a firearm, is it a firearm? Hmm. And not too long ago, in California, I want to say the ATF dropped a case against someone who's like, well, it doesn't match this definition, so it's not really a gun. He didn't do anything wrong, which would put all AR-15s in the world of not firearms. Mm-hmm. So they backed off on that.
that case was particularly interesting. So the guy was illegally making not just AR-15s, but full auto AR-15s in California, was caught doing this. And his legal defense was that the parts I was making aren't legally firearms based on what the definition of firearm is. And I think they went one level in the courts because the first judge they talked to was like, no, you were making firearms. We know how this works. Quit being stupid. But then the next judge they got it in front of was like, well, hang on. The definition of firearms is it has to contain this part and this part and this part. AR-15 lowers don't have any of those parts. And that's the part you were making. And then, you know, he stands there before the judge and goes, well, yes, Your Honor. And then the judge has to throw the case out. And so, well, the judge was going to throw the case out, and then the prosecution dropped charges against him because if the judge ruled AR-15 lowers are no longer firearms, then all AR-15s in the country no longer have a firearm part, and then how do you define it as a firearm? There's then no definition on the book, and then you'd be able to buy or you know, buy and sell AR-15s as though they were like cartons of milk or cartons of eggs.
There's a lot of that.
From Smith & Wesson, mail order into your door via UPS.
Like the good old days.
It's the dream.
A whole pallet of AR-15s right to your door.
So this guy had a fully automatic AR-15 that was homemade.
Not just one. He had like 30 something of them. He was manufacturing them and selling them.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of that of those laws and whatnot. There's you know, I'm sure you know this. There's laws that aren't tested, right? You can
sure.
Any you know, let's say lawyer can write up a law that can say whatever, and it doesn't, you know, it can basically take effect even though it's never been tested in front of a judge, right? It's never been tested for constitutionality. Like, we don't even pretend to be, you know, this law is constitutional anymore. We don't do that anymore. The kind of big, I mean, for me, the big case there is Wickert v. Filburn, which I don't know if you guys know about, but is a fascinating. So you should look up after we're done here. You should look up Wickert v. Filburn. It's basically how the Commerce Clause gets applied to everything. Like, it is the single most probably important case that I know of as far as like U.S. federalism versus states and all that goes. Like, I don't know that there's a more important case.
Hmm.
And the short version is, you know, the feds set these standards of, you know, if you're a farmer, you can sell this much grain in interstate commerce, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was like, okay, I'll take that much grain. I'll grow myself another acre out back. And then the courts, the, you know, the feds come in, whatever, like, oh yeah, no, he's selling that plus one. And mm-hmm. he's like, no, this is my grain for my use. And the feds' argument, this flew some way somehow, is that, yeah, he's not going to buy as much grain in interstate commerce if he grows his own.
Hmm.
That's why we have marijuana prohibition. That's why we have all these gun laws. That's why we have all of these things because of that one case, Wickert v. Filburn.
Using the Commerce Clause very creatively.
Taking all limits off of it. I don't remember what case it's been said in, but you know, that what limit does it actually have? And as far as I can tell, there's basically no limit.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have you guys on the show is that I have a very good friend. I live in East Oakland, sort of working class Oakland, you know, where there's a lot of crime, et cetera. And I have a friend who is a career drug dealer. And he told me just a couple of weeks ago that around here, he's noticed just a huge influx or, you know, just a huge amount of creation of 3D printed guns in Oakland. And I have to, again, I'm still scared, guys. I need you to make me less scared. So when I hear fully automatic, we're talking about a machine gun. Let's start. I'm trying to figure out. I have two sets of questions for you. First, I want to get into like what you guys do specifically. Talk about your websites and what you're actually doing and producing. And then I want to get into the monopoly on violence that the state holds and what you're doing to that, which is the big thing here. You know, you are obviously all subverting the state's quote legitimate monopoly on violence, and that is why this is so revolutionary, and that's why it's so scary for certainly those in power, but even for little chicken shits like me who are on your side politically. I am, but this is the one thing that's hard for me. This is the one thing that's hard in a sort of anarcho world. But I don't know. Let me ask you then. Yeah, go ahead.
So I mean, the kind of question there is, the question that I get a lot is, you know, what if the bad guys get them?
Sure.
But, you know, you being postmodernist and familiar with language and all that should know damn well the difference between good and bad, not difference, but like the how flexible those terms can be, right?
Gotcha.
So it matters, you know, which bad guys. I don't think the police are the good guys.
Right.
I don't think I've ever called the police and had them like show up at my house for something that I wanted. You know, I've been extorted by them for driving, you know, slower than they were. That's just math. You want to catch me, you got to drive faster than I was going. You know, and then your friend who is the, you know, career drug dealer, I don't know anything about him, but is he a bad guy? Maybe not. It's the same thing.
Only if you steal money. Only if you steal
I lost you there a little bit.
Only if you steal a lot of money from him, will he be a bad guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, you steal a bunch of money from you don't even steal money from the cops. The cops are going to come steal your money.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about bad guys with machine guns. So the only crime I know of by a bad guy with a machine gun was Las Vegas.
Vegas, well, Miami, and I want to say, oh, and then the, was it Hollywood, bank heist?
Oh, the big in Glendale, the three guys in the body armor who went after the Bank of America.
And the Vegas guy didn't even have a quote unquote machine gun.
He didn't have a machine gun until well after the event where they decided that what he used was a machine gun. So he used a bump stock, which is a silly device that makes it so every time the gun recoils, it bounces your finger off the trigger. So as long as you pull forward with your support hand, it keeps pulling your finger into the trigger it just pulled it off of. So it makes a semi-automatic try and act like it doesn't even change how a semi-automatic works. It just bounces your finger off the trigger and then pulls it again. So it sort of like moves the gun around your finger and you just sort of keep your finger in the same place. And the Obama administration had decided that, you know, that device is known as a bump stock because it, you know, bumps your finger off the trigger every time it recoils. And the Obama administration had decided that that isn't a machine gun because every one pull of the trigger gives you one bullet in return, which is the definition of semi-automatic and not fully automatic.
Right.
The Trump administration had the Department of Justice, I believe, lean on the ATF to reverse that ruling and essentially just make up some gibberish about, well, it doesn't matter what the definition says. It sort of acts like what the other definition says, despite the fact
that it's untested.
Right. So it is completely untested. And I don't think it would stand up very well if it was tested because, you know, the definition says one trigger pull, one bullet equals semi-automatic. The other the definition of full auto is one trigger pull equals more than one bullet. Bump stock doesn't give you more than one bullet per trigger pull. It just sort of makes the gun bounce around your trigger finger, but you're still pulling it every time. So you know, because of that, the official story, the one we've been given about the Vegas shooting, is that he did use a bump stock, though he did have what the feds consider an actual machine gun up there with him. They claimed that he never actually used that. So they had recovered what's known as a Swift Link, which is a little device that you can put in an AR-15 that makes it well and truly fully automatic. They had recovered one of those, you know, from the room. But last I heard, you know, the official, you know, the documents that were FOIA'd from the investigation said that that device wasn't used and that they only believe bump stock equipped rifles were used.
Alex's first dream was to own a machine gun. Right? Isn't that what you said?
One of them. Yeah.
Right. Well, why? Just because it's the most powerful weapon?
No, just because it's a hell of a lot of fun to shoot.
Oh,
it's that It comes back to that base sort of instinctual, oh, this is kind of cool. At least these days, it's ridiculously expensive to shoot, but it's still a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, because ammo is super expensive right now, right?
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous.
Why is that?
Everyone's buying it. We're looking at a hostile administration in a weird time where, you know, everyone we're in a weird time of like massive government overreach across the board. Mm-hmm. At every level of government. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's a little uncomfortable with just the number of like laws that are passed in relation to the pandemic concerns,
things that are said by
various politicians. Yeah, the riots, civil unrest. So all of these things are colliding. Everyone's thinking, even the people who are wildly against guns are thinking, you know, the police department's closed because of Corona. So who am I going to call when someone Molotovs my house? Mm-hmm.
So Alex, how long have you been a racist?
Geez. I want to say at least 40 years. I'm only 32. So.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Are you a self-hating Asian? Is that what this is about?
I mean, I feel like I hate everybody pretty equally, but.
Ah, that's what.
Yeah. Myself especially.
I knew that's what this was really all about for all three of you guys.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So Control Pew, otherwise known as Alex, I guess people are probably still wondering, what exactly is it you guys do? Talk about your website, Alex. What is it that your website does? What are you doing for people in this regard?
So the main thing on my site is probably the Getting Started Guide. It's to get people started, not just with printing guns, but printing in general.
Okay.
So we've sort of worked through the printers that are out there, through all of the various methodologies of you know, and costs, and we've sort of sussed out the best way to get started in printing for the least amount of money, just to figure out if you like printing in general, if you want to deal with the problems that come along with trying to troubleshoot, you know, the quality of a print or anything you're trying to do with it. So we came together as a community, we wrote a guide, I published it up on my site, and it's kind of become the sort of almost Bible of beginning printing.
Oh.
For beginning printing on the cheap. So everyone's thinking, oh, you need a $10,000 printer. No, you can get the printer for under $200. Everything else you need after that is less than $100.
Wow.
And, you know, $300, that's not a lot to spend on a hobby. For most people.
Yeah.
So $300, you can figure out if you like it. If you do like it, keep going, dive into it, figure out what you really want to do. If you did like it, sell a printer on Craigslist. You're not out much.
I watched the, don't you have like a recent version of that video? I just watched it.
Yeah, I've got a couple videos out. I'm working on some more. I'm working on like the whole video guide. So
when you said you could buy a printer for less than $200, my jaw dropped. I did not expect that. I did not expect that.
Nope.
So this is definitely an everyman's and every woman's hobby or whatever you want to call it. It's much more than that for you guys and for a lot of people. Jeff, what does your website do? Similar stuff, right?
Not exactly. So honestly, I want to give these guys credit for, I think what they've done and brought onto the, into like 3D printing gun world is building a community that has so far been unrivaled. The what we had before was FOSCAD, and there's, I don't know, hundreds of us, maybe 1,000 of us that have been in and through there.
What is FOSCAD?
These days kind of the watering hole where the different groups kind of come and meet, to the extent that has anyone kind of running it. I'm the moderator in the chat room and all that. And mostly just keep it really open, so that anyone who wants to can come in there and chat with, you know, any of these groups, any of these people about, you know, mostly 3D printing guns, but all sorts of other things. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it started. And then I was loosely affiliated with that, and more that I have my own project. The Liberator 12K project was something that I just did on my own. And I'm, you know, I hang out in FOSCAD a lot. Yeah, so on my website, I'm kind of pulling together at least my project and lots of different pieces. So I've wanted to, from the beginning, to put every nail in the coffin of gun control. So every little facet, every finger hold of control around this, I've wanted to annihilate, basically. It's gotten a lot further, and Ivan and Deterrent Suspense have done a lot in that regard, because the group is now huge. I want to say there's 20,000 some odd people in that group. Now, yeah, so that's moved a lot faster, but like I kind of set out some of these goals. Like, here are these, you know, coffin nails that we need to get. We need to get the gun. We need to get the ammo. We need to get the components for the ammo. We need to do all these things. And part of what my website has done, we pull those things together. And I'm not just building like one gun. The part of kind of the idea here was to, you know, again, kind of deal all those things. So the website has everything from making your own ammo, like projectiles, or printing the casings for the ammo. I'm going to say just this last month, this last 2 months, the part of making your own gunpowder has really been kind of nailed. I don't know that there's a great answer. I mean, there's some answers for the primers. So there's multiple components to a bullet, right? Or what you would call a bullet, a cartridge. There's the projectile. There's the powder. There's the initiator, which we call the primer, which is what gets hit and sets it off. Each of these things you need, and there's all different components in there. And right now, there is, until recently, that was almost completely nothing you could do about that. You know, there was no answer for, you know, getting around the gun control on that. If you banned ammo, you're kind of SOL.
Right.
It's a lot better now. Anyway, sorry. What's on the website is to answer all of these questions and the different angles and different pieces and different gun models that I'm building in my project. So I have that. I'm just kind of trying to pull together all of the different pieces you would need. Like, I'm trying to make it easier for gun designers. I'm making a platform for gun designers. I'm not making a gun. Here's this whole, you know, framework, scaffolding, all right, the tools, everything you need to design new guns. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm going with mine.
How did you put it about, what do you want? Oh, you want to annihilate every aspect of gun control. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that's what you guys are up to. Ivan, what does your website do?
So I guess it's like, so I'm a computer science major, right? I've admitted that before. So I should be good at making websites. And in school, I did actually go through the trouble of making decent looking websites. Okay. Only for, you know, I learned CSS enough to the point to know that I absolutely hate it.
Okay.
So instead of making a nice looking website, I made a website that looks like it's straight out of the 90s and made by someone who doesn't know how to make websites.
Yes,
so that's
it does.
My claim to fame. So what I wanted to do was make like a very simple, indexable way to search through all the files and sort of information, the knowledge base, if you will, that's out there. So all of the downloads, you know, like way a long time ago, probably like whenever we first released something as Deterrence Dispensed, we did so on mega.nz, because it allows mass downloads from a single link. Mega being owned by Kim.com, who doesn't like guns, as well as Mega not liking guns. That was we were living on borrowed time from the beginning. And I believe even to this day, my like home IP address, so I mean my external facing IP address, is banned from making Mega accounts, because every time I make one, I get my thanks for making a Mega account, and your Mega account has been terminated immediately afterwards. So I think I managed to upset them.
Yeah.
So we realized Mega was not a tenable solution any longer. So I put out a tweet asking like, so you know, what do we do from here? And there was like a million different people shilling all sorts of like difficult ways of putting files on the internet. Like, here's a way to torrent something that only requires the person who wants to download it to have like 4 years in college and, you know, 100, you know, 10 years experience using computers and the internet. And, you know, that's a non-starter for me, because I want it to be like a one-click download, just the way Mega worked. And so one guy suggests, well, look into this library, and it's spelled LBRY. And at first I thought that this was just like one of those like crappy shitcoin knockoff of Bitcoins that don't really do anything besides like probably try and like investment scam people. Mm-hmm. And so I was hesitant at first, but I talked with one of their developers, and then their developer walked me, like handheld me through how to use it. And then I, you know, put the first file in library and went to download it, and like, sure enough, it was like super easy. And so, you know, we started using library just as a sort of like, yeah, we'll maybe find something better, but this works for now. Except library is like really grown into this tool. And I mean, their ideology is like in a great place. So, you know, I was finally cemented on using their service when their CEO had a picture that as his pinned tweet that was it's like the code that you'd need to 3D print a gun that was encoded as an image. So, you know, using image decoding software that would then become the code that you'd need to print a gun. And he had that on his pinned tweet as a sort of like, look, gun, you know, the code to print guns is a freedom of speech thing. And I was like, holy cow, we really found it. You know, we finally found that, you know, a platform that not only works, it's very simple for the end user to download things. And ideologically, not only are they like ambivalent towards this, they're like, a proponent of what we're doing even. So I thought that was awesome. Cool. So you know, this is like my podcast standard plug for Library, LBRY. Doesn't matter if you're like a content creator or whatever it is that you do. It's specifically built around like video sharing is like a sort of a YouTube replacement, but you can put any file you'd like up there. So that's super cool and useful.
Okay.
So the only issue though, this was a very long-winded way of saying, when going through all of our downloads in Library, we eventually hit the point about the time we had like 20, 30 of them that it became very hard to scroll through them because you'd have to hit like next page and you couldn't just control F for like Glock 17 or Glock 19 or AR-15, whatever you were looking for. So I decided it would be useful if I had like an alternate version. So you can go and look at those files on Library. But what I did is on my website, just pulled all of those links into one place on my website where it's like categorized by, if you're looking for like 2D machinist blueprint sort of drawings of guns, like the old school way of learning how to make a gun, we just have a list of all of those. Okay. If you're looking specifically for the files about printing guns, here's where you go to find all of those. If you're looking for like miscellaneous stuff, so like information on making ammunition or how it is that you exploit loopholes in Europe to buy gunpowder legally, we've got just a section of miscellaneous stuff like that.
Okay.
And so my website was sort of built in that idea of it makes finding these things a little bit easier, just a different indexing system.
Okay. So am I right that all three of your sites simply help people make their own guns? That's it. Is that right?
Yeah, it's entirely what mine does because it's just like links to links.
You're not selling anything. You're not making any money on this.
I sell patches and shirts,
right,
and trying
right,
yes. to do some dev funding.
Oh, merch? You sell merch?
I'm selling merch. I'm trying to roll that into like community funding for projects and things that get expensive, like
right. Merch, which is not firearms though.
Not firearms.
I will eventually be doing kits out of mine. I've been developing my gun for a long time, and in the end, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like parts you can buy from Home Depot or, you know, eBay or whatever, AliExpress, Amazon. You can source them yourself, but the idea will be to like, here, you just buy the kit. Same way as you can buy what we would call like a lower parts kit for an AR today. Mm-hmm. But here's all the nuts and bolts and springs and all the stuff that's not a gun, but you know, you need if you want.
How many different kinds of firearms can one now make?
God. It's a lot. So 2 years ago, it was like AR-15s, pretty easy. The VZ-61 Scorpion, which is a Cold War era Czechoslovakian machine pistol sort of a thing, which is a really cool gun. I'm like a huge fan of the gun. But that was like another one of the guns you could print. But much beyond AR-15s, the VZ-61 were pretty much it as far as like, you know, printing the one federally regulated component. Mm-hmm. And then there was probably three good designs that followed this, like where you're printing most of the gun, and that was the Songbird, the Wash Bear, and then Liberator. But Liberator is like by far the worst of those three. Liberator is only worth mentioning because it was the OG. It was the one Cody Wilson fired in 2013.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that's sort of that layout. And I guess it's worth mentioning. So like I did a research report with ARES, which is Armament Research something is the ES. But they're a research organization that essentially just puts out like incredibly in-depth, well-documented information about all sorts of things, small arms and even bigger than small arms. So light weapons like mortars and rocket launchers and that sort of thing. So I did, they contacted me to do some consulting for background information on a report specifically about 3D printed guns. And so they had asked me to come up with a way to sort of like typify printed guns. So how do you, on one end of the spectrum, you just print a lower for an AR-15. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got the Liberator, where the only part you haven't printed is a nail that you use for the firing pin. So I'd laid out three different categories where, you know, there's parts kit completion is what I called the, where you print just the federally regulated component in the US. Although in Canada, this loophole also exists where generally it's only one or two parts. Sometimes Canada regulates two parts of the gun as being a firearm. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, I called those parts kit completion. So you buy a parts kit, which is the kit of all the parts that aren't a firearm, and then you make the firearm yourself. So it's a parts kit completion 3D printed gun. Then I decided there had to be a second place, like a middle of the ground where it's partially printed or hybrid is what I called it. And it's hybrid because the outwards appearance of the gun is printed. So if all the parts of the gun that were printed in pink plastic, it would look like a Barbie gun, like very obviously, like, you know, it's fantastic. It's plastic. It's fantastic.
Right.
But it does still then use metal parts for things like the barrel or the bolt or fire control parts even. So some of the parts of the gun that are, you know, best served to be made of metal, so like the bolt and barrel, generally important to have them be metal, they end up being metal. But the outwards appearance of the gun is printed because so much of it is printed. So it's a hybrid where it uses the fact that printing makes certain parts very easy to make, but certain parts it doesn't lend itself well to making. So that'd be like barrels and bolts. You can't just go and print them. You can print parts that make it easier to make bolts and barrels, but you can't just straight up go and print them.
Okay.
Better to use hardware stores.
Okay.
So hardware store parts.
Ivan, now that you've mentioned it, I want to tell you guys what I really, really want. I want to skip past the gun shit because that's too small for me. I want a rocket launcher. I've always wanted a rocket launcher. Are you telling me I can do that legally?
No, well, this is the part where I rain all over your parade.
Oh.
There's a law.
Wait. I want to make it really clear here. It's going to be a pink rocket launcher so that it will be acceptable to the Biden administration.
Right, there you go.
Okay. It's two Benjamins, and then yes, you can make one.
Two Benjamins?
Yeah, and you can make one. Yeah.
Really?
So, okay. So there was a law that went into effect in 1934, and then not necessarily an addendum to that law, but a law that sort of says the same things that went into effect in 1968. And then there was a amendment to that law that was in 1986. That's right. Something like that. Anyway, in 1934, the federal government was scared of gangsters and Tommy guns and people running around with concealed auto-loading pistols.
J. Edgar Hoover.
Right, that sort of thing.
Yes.
So they passed what's known as the National Firearms Act. Right. The National Firearms Act was originally aimed at making it so you couldn't own a machine gun. Mm-hmm. You couldn't own any sort of like small, compact, concealable weapons either. So it specifically banned machine guns outright. So if you get more than one bullet per pull of the trigger, can't own it without paying extra taxes. They then made it so for short-barreled shotguns and short-barreled rifles, you couldn't own them without paying this tax as well because they're so concealable. And originally, it was going to be any handgun. So any gun that was designed to be fired with one hand, so any handgun was going to be on the NFA. At the last minute, that got nixed. And so, you know, the handgun was the main aim of the concealable thing. They were concerned about short-barreled rifles and short-barreled shotguns because they're almost the size of a handgun in terms of concealability. So they axed the handgun at the last second, and short-barreled shotguns and rifles ended up there for some stupid reason. But also in the 1934 NFA was a silencer, so, you know, sound suppressors for firearms. Anything that makes the sound of the gun firing it all quieter is also considered this National Firearms Act item. So it's an NFA item. So you have to pay, you know, back then they set the tax at $200. $200 in 1934 was like approaching the amount of money you needed to buy a car.
Sure.
So then it was specifically aimed at making it so, you know, for rich people, that's not a problem. Rich people would go out and buy as many machine guns as they like. But if you're poor, specifically, you know, especially at that time in the country, there were certain ethnic groups that the government wasn't so fond of that they may still not be fond of. It's up for discussion, but they didn't want them owning guns. That's not acceptable. So they want to price them out of owning the more effective or interesting or in their mind, dangerous sorts of firearms. Because of course there's, you know, in 1934, if you're working in the government, there's nothing more terrifying than a black guy who has an auto loading handgun that he could steal on his person.
Oh, so this I don't have to ask you how long you've been a racist, because you're sounding very non-racist now. Is this right?
Oh no, of course.
Okay, just wait, Alex. I mean, I'm sorry, Ivan. Where's my damn rocket launcher? You getting that? Okay,
I am. So I'm not sure if it was in 1934 that they also put destructive devices on that list. I think they may have, but by 1968 and the 1968 sort of addendum to this, they made it so destructive devices, which they defined as anything that has a bore size that's over 50 caliber. So anything that has a bore, so the size of the bullet is over half an inch,
right,
in their minds now becomes a destructive device.
Gotcha.
As well as anything that explodes, like a grenade is a destructive device. Any warhead for a rocket is now a destructive device. In some situations, ammunition for things that doesn't explode or isn't explosive at all, but just because the ammunition is bigger than half an inch, it is then regulated as though it were a destructive device. There are exceptions to this. So shotguns are exempted from this, so long as the shotguns serve a sporting purpose. And I think the sporting purpose clause came after that 1968. And the idea behind the sporting purpose clause is obviously shotguns, 12-gauge shotgun has a bore over half an inch, and they didn't want to make it impossible or it's very expensive to own a shotgun because shotguns being a very popular option. But they added the sporting purpose clause because they were like super cool shotguns that in the minds of the government are super lame and dangerous. Like things like the Street Sweeper Dow 12, and things like the
Street
I think
Sweeper.
I think the Spaz 12, like from Jurassic Park, I believe.
Terrible names. Getting, Street Sweeper and Spaz. You don't want to name your guns that.
Well, it's Spaz is it's Italian or French or something. So it means something
doesn't
to
mean
them.
Spastic. Okay.
No, in the US it does not mean spastic. But I think that the Spaz also ended up catching one of these no sporting purpose things.
Okay.
So the government started like leveling like, well, these particular shotguns aren't for shooting ducks or whatever, and so therefore you can't own them without paying an extra tax stamp because they count as destructive devices.
Right.
So RPG, of course, now we're back to RPGs, have a bore much over half an inch.
Yeah, sure.
Not only inside of the tube, but the warhead is much, much bigger than half an inch. So things like RPGs are out as far as being not destructive devices. That said, if you can manage to find a tube or make a tube for an RPG, certainly can make a tube for one, because they're, as far as like a firearms or weaponry go, they're not complex at all. In fact, they're closer to being the first kinds of firearms that were ever invented were very close, like fireworks launchers types of things, much more similar to RPGs than modern firearms are, if you're willing to believe that.
Yeah.
So it's fairly simple to build your own, but you have to pay that $200 tax stamp to the government. $200 nowadays is nowhere near as bad as it was in 1934 or 1968 even.
Cool.
So the way that process works is you get what's known as, I believe, a Form 1, and that's essentially a form where you have to go to your police station and get fingerprinted, and your police chief or local police authority has to like swear that you're not going to like blow up the local school or whatever, and then you pay $200 and send that paperwork off. And then about 9 months later, it'll come back. The ATF will get back to you, and they'll, generally speaking, if it takes a whole 9 months, they'll get back to you and say, yes, you're approved. And then at that point you can begin building your RPG. And I should have mentioned, whenever you send your paperwork in, you'll tell them that I'm going to this, the serial number that you want to slap on the thing.
You also need $200 tax stamp for each RPG, each projectile.
So, this is the part where it gets lame. So that's just to make your rocket launching tubes. So that's where you make the RPG itself. Now, if you're wanting to shoot RPG ammunition out of this, each RPG warhead you shoot out of your thing needs one of these $200 stamps, because the RPG is one of those examples of, even if the projectile doesn't explode, each individual projectile needs a $200 stamp. And of course, because it's an RPG, when that projectile hits something, it blows up. So you don't get to reuse it because it's blown into tons of little fragmentations that are meant to blow people up, of course.
I think my favorite part here is that is being facetious. And we're like, no, you really can make your own RPG. Right. It's just going to cost you $400.
I'm not really being that facetious. That is how I don't know why. It's been my fantasy for many years. I never really wanted a gun, but I did want a rocket launcher.
Yeah, it costs you about $400 if you want to take a shot.
Yeah, and it will be pink. It'll be an LGBT rocket launcher, so it'll be fine. It'll go
rainbow. There are rainbow filaments if you want to go that whole route.
Hell yeah! No, of course I want to be politically correct here. That's what this show is about. All right, now so let's get down to brass tacks, fellas. So it sounds to me like if every American adult made every possible firearm there is, right? Who could we take on with that? I know we don't have an Air Force, right? So they're gonna beat us in the air, right? Well, although I guess we could create one, sort of. I don't know. Can we create bombs yet? But I don't know. But on the ground, could we take on, if every American had every one of these weapons, could we take on an army?
I mean, ask the Vietnamese. The Vietnamese are less well-equipped than the average American citizen.
Fantastic and point.
The Vietnamese made an absolute embarrassment out of, you know, if you ask me, at least in my mind, the strongest, you know, the most disproportionate strength that the United States Armed Forces has ever had over anyone ever about the 70s, 80s. We had a Navy so strong that no one could even have a chance, and that's probably still true today, but our Navy was like second to none. We had nuclear... Even if we discount our entire nuclear arsenal at point in history, we've got helicopters. We've got jets that are so good and well designed that no one else in the world can even try and compare. Especially if you look at like the kill death ratios of our jet fighters that we used in the Vietnam War. It wasn't even close. It was like embarrassingly bad for the bad guys. Sure. How good our Air Force, how good our Navy, how good our big equipment was. Mm-hmm. And then when it came to fighting in the jungle, we got crapped on. Doesn't matter how many helicopters we have. It doesn't matter how much napalm you dump on them. We have an entire country just mass producing napalm. And still, these rice farmers who don't have near the training, near the education, near the supplies, near the backbone, you know, the logistical backbone that we had, still managed to beat us. And it wasn't like we just gave up quickly. We were fighting over there. I think Vietnam's the longest war the United States has ever been in, excluding the war on terror, because that's like 15 different wars on terror.
Afghanistan, yeah. Yeah, right. Ivan, to quote Tonto, who is we, white man? No, that's an outstanding point. I make this point all the time. When these little revolutionaries from Brooklyn, you know, talk about how hard it is and how dangerous it is and how much sacrifice it takes to forge revolution, to say, tell that to the Vietnamese. Exactly your point. They beat the United States, not we. They beat the United States, the biggest, baddest military in the history of the world at that point, which had total superiority in every place except where the Vietnamese actually lived. Right? And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about where we live. And it sounds to me like, well, okay, this is the question I was going to ask you guys. I'll start with you, Alex. My friend, the drug dealer, who said that the hood is filling up with guns, a lot of 3D printed guns. What is your estimate? Because I've heard, you hear the numbers about how there's now more guns in America than citizens, but of course that's all legal guns, right? It's all sort of purchased regular guns, not 3D printed guns. So my goodness, we don't even know. I mean, I want to know from you guys, how many are there out there? Total. I mean, what do you think?
People have been building guns in their homes far longer than they've been printing. It's just gotten easier now. I would imagine like probably 80% of, you know, on top of the existence of the, what was the number? Was
400 some odd.
400 some million.
Million?
The most recent I saw was just over 400 million. It's what the gun control organizations were saying.
But that's not counting
400 million.
That's not counting what you guys do, right?
Right.
That's insane. That's incredible.
The sales. That's just the background checks.
Yeah, and hold on. So right now there's a little less than 200 million American adults. Okay. Adult Americans, a little less than 200 million. 400 regular guns, something like that, and then all the 3D printed and DIY guns. So tell me, I want to hear how many, Alex, how many do you think? You have a sense, you're in the community. How many people have made guns with your stuff, do you think?
On the whole, I think 3D printed is still the minority of DIY guns.
Okay.
But I would venture a guess at least 100? I don't know. 100 million on top of that, maybe? I don't know.
That's what I was going to say.
It's almost unfathomable.
If we consider that prior to 1968, there was no requirement to put serial numbers on guns, so guns made prior to 68, no one has any idea. In order to know how many of them were made, you have to look at like the shoddy serial number systems that people kept. Uh-huh. So, like, you know, in the case of, you know, my personal favorite handgun is the Browning High Power. Browning High Powers that were made by FN prior to 1968 that were imported into the U.S. had serial numbers stamped on them, and there's just gaps in serial numbers. So no one actually knows how many were made. Mm. You know, it's between a couple hundred thousand to maybe almost a million were made in that time period, but you really have no idea of knowing. As well as, you know, especially with like World War II bringbacks and prior to strict import laws on firearms, you could bring in guns without letting the government know, at least to the same level that they have to know today. Today, they really have to know if you bring a gun in. Back then, you know, especially given the level of record keeping that would be expected from them back then, you could be bringing in guns prior to 1968 fairly easily, as well as guns just made in the country weren't required to be documented very well. Mm-hmm. So certainly lots and lots of guns from before that time.
It's probably not a stretch to say there might be a billion guns in the U.S.
Really?
That's probably like, you know, I might not win on Price is Right rules, but like that's probably not too far off from the truth.
Somewhere between half a billion and 1 billion with a B is
what you guys are saying. I didn't even consider the pre-68 like background check business, any of that.
And if we go by what the ATF calls a gun, like they call a gun is not what I would call a gun or what you would call a gun. Right. If you go based off their definition, a billion is probably very possible. Yeah,
that's pretty fair.
Okay, so go ahead. Wait, I was just going to say, so let me just say, so I am now way less nervous about one thing in particular, which is the Chinese invading our country and taking over, right? Because this is the big fantasy of some people on the right. That the Trumpist right, they're terrified of the Chinese. I don't know if they're predicting that the Chinese will invade, but a lot of people are. And how could that, or any other country, the Russians, whoever? I mean, this well-armed a citizenry, I don't see, right? I mean, going house to house and enslaving us, making us work for them. I mean, colonizing us. How is that going to work, right? Am I right about this, guys? Have we made ourselves like immune to colonization by foreign powers?
If we assumed that we didn't have the best funded military in the world, as well as like the most technologically advanced one way or the other in the world.
Yeah. I'm saying if the US military fails, right. If they lose the war.
Right. Right. So all of our carriers got nuked or hit by China's whatever hypersonic carrier killer missiles. Right. And then we're doomed and we get invaded. I feel like it'd be very difficult to make progress very fast. They'd have to adopt the tactic where they just kill civilians on site. And then how great a victory can you win if, you, the invading force, are scorched earthing yourself.
Yeah.
So you have to burn down the houses that you would like to be living in, and you have to destroy the fields and crops that you would like to be eating to keep the people who are actually living there from having them, because they're going to want to fight you for it.
Or more to the point, we are now no longer able to shop at Walmart for Chinese-made goods when we're dead.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's encouraging news.
I mean, there's. Well, I wouldn't call it a Japanese proverb, but what was it? General. It's not Yamato. Yamamoto. Thank you. During World War II, you don't go to a land war in the U.S. Like there's going to be a gun behind every blade of grass. This is why you know.
This was World War II before we had just rampant guns everywhere.
Yeah, there was only half a billion guns.
Yeah. Right.
And as everybody knows, well, most people know who follow this stuff, we have a significant, radical, really, decline in gun deaths since the mid-90s, right? While we have flooded, apparently the population has been flooded with guns in that precisely that time, precisely since the mid-90s, right, is when this has all happened.
That's something that I've done some research into and given some opinions on, and I think this is really well backed up by a couple different reports that I had read, and they had proposed, and it makes sense that the largest predictor of violent crime is poverty level and income level and income disparity, more so than anything, more so than it is the access to a firearm.
Sure.
So violent crime happens more often where you have people who have very little, especially when they live close to people who do have something. Obviously, if no one had anything, if we were rocking in a Venezuela situation, it's not like you can't go to steal anything from your neighbor because he also has nothing. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, if you've got cities like specifically in California, you've got rundown neighborhoods that are extremely close to neighborhoods where there's $5-6 million mansions lined up right next to each other. So of course you're going to see more violent crime happen as a result of that, and the firearms aren't going to necessarily predict one's willingness to kill people. And as well as, I will give some credence to the fact, and this is an argument that anti-gun groups use is that most of this huge increase in gun sales has been people who already own a gun or just getting more guns. Although what the anti-gun groups don't realize they're arguing when they say that is, they're arguing that these people who have lots and lots of guns are inherently not violent because they're not killing people with them. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to, I don't know, they're not trying to have their cake and eat it too. They're trying to make it so there isn't a cake, and then they're still trying to eat the cake that they're not trying to make. I don't know. But
right. Yeah. I want to riff on your China invasion thing real quick.
Yeah.
Let's just say if China invaded, you wouldn't be paying $200 for an RPG.
Free RPGs.
So price drop, maybe.
Big price drop.
Yeah. To that same extent. I mean, we, Ivan, you want to talk about the Yankee Boogle?
Right. I saw this. I saw this on one of your sites. I forget who, was it Ivan's site? It has the Yankee.
Probably.
Yeah. I think it's
Yeah.
Ivan. I just saw this.
So. Yeah. So prior to the Yankee Boogle's existence,
say it again. Say it again. Yankee Boogle. Right.
Definitely don't Google it.
Yeah. Don't Google the Boogle.
I saw that too. Yeah. Don't Google it.
So I'll start with what the Yankee Boogle is, then I'll go into how it came to be because it's sort of an interesting story.
Okay.
So the Yankee Boogle is a device that you can put into you can 3D print that you can put into any sort of like common off the shelf AR-15, and it turns it into a full auto AR-15. So it's a little piece of plastic, costs maybe 20 cents to print, maybe takes 30 minutes to print, and then it makes your AR-15 shoot a little bit quicker.
Damn.
So the Yankee Boogle is a device known as a Swift Link. Hmm. And Swift Links essentially allow an AR-15 with a standard semi-automatic fire control group to work as if it was full auto. The first recorded instance, as far as I've seen, of a Swift Link being recognized in official literature is after the Las Vegas shooting. Mm-hmm. Although I've heard some people say that these things have been at gun shows being sold illegally as early as like 2012. They've been around for some time, and that's likely where the Vegas shooter picked one up. Mm-hmm. But the first official documentation I've seen of them is in, the ATF has a list that they send out to all of their field agents that essentially says, this is what you're looking for whenever you're looking for illegal machine guns. Because, the things the ATF considers a machine gun make even less sense than the things that they consider are firearms. So the Yankee Boogle is just like this weird looking lump of plastic, and to the ATF that on its own is a machine gun. That one part is a machine gun in and of itself. That's 20 years in prison if you're caught with one that you've manufactured. Ooh. So as far as the ATF is concerned, that's the whole ball game right there. So they have this list of all these things that are considered machine guns like that, and the first official time you see one come up is the first time you see a Swift Link, which is what the Yankee Boogle is, come up in their stuff is right after the Vegas shooting. So they recognize it exists after that point. Mm. So I'm not sure how familiar you are with like a gun YouTube celebrities around, I don't know, 10 years ago.
Oh no, not at all. I only know about that dumb chick, the one with the blonde hair who.
Oh gosh. Yeah. We can't even call her a gun YouTuber celebrity.
I know.
She's like a,
I know, she's an idiot. Okay. We all agree.
Sure. So I was going to say something worse than that, but that's fine. It will leave it an idiot. So, there was a guy who went by Carnicon. Well, he went by Dugan Ashley on his show, and his show was Carnicon. And essentially he sort of pioneered the, you can do stupid, funny things with guns on YouTube. So he was pretending he was going to like do an honest comparison between a Glock and a 1911, for example. Mm-hmm. The 1911 being like a design that's favored by people who are like 80 years old, and then the Glock being favored by people who have brains, who aren't willing to be stuck in the past against their own better interests. But he was pretending like he was doing an honest comparison, but like the whole riff behind this video that he was doing is he's going to get progressively more drunk as he's doing this test, to the point where he just gets to the test, like, how far can I throw a gun, because that's irrelevant, and it's relevant to how good the gun is. So he just takes this Glock and chucks it as hard as he can. So this is like this just barely gets into the sort of antics that he would get to on his show. It's really good stuff, and maybe borderlines on being, it's as close as you can get to being unsafe with guns while still being safe with guns, like doing dumb things with guns that aren't necessarily unsafe, because it's not like you're going to get yourself shot, you're just going to like break guns doing dumb things with them. So that was sort of his show. Unfortunately, he got multiple sclerosis and has been fighting that for some time, and ended his YouTube channel as a result of that, which was sad. You know, most people were afraid they'd seen him go forever. And like, he'd popped up on a couple other YouTube gun channels just once or twice in the past like 10 years. But like, out of the blue, I get an email from one of my contacts saying, Dugan Ashley wants to talk to you. And I'm like, no, I mean, like, maybe a guy pretending to be him wants to talk to me. And so, no, it turns out like it's actually him. And so, you know, it's like, holy cow, you know, sort of starstruck for a moment. But he was said, like, so at this point, there was already a printable Swift link that was out there. But he had said that he had been working on his own and he'd sort of put together a video to go with it. And that was, of course, that, in my opinion, like 10 out of 10, absolutely hilarious video. And so that guy that's in the video in the ATF jacket is Dugan Ashley, back in his character, you know, again, doing fun things with guns. And so, he had asked me if, dude, I think that the community, the printed world generally would be interested in this little doodad, the Yankee Boogle, as he called it. And so I was like, yes, of course, especially if you've got like a video to go with it and you're back in your character, it'd be great. And so he did. And the video was great. And it was like, it was a pretty big hit. You know, people were like really about it for a little bit. And then it sort of died into not obscurity, but like you just occasionally see someone like post a picture of one they printed illegally. And it's like, ha ha ha, look, he's got the government good on this one. But very recently, and this was the reason I felt like going into the whole story. So very recently, there was, and by very recently, I mean about 9 months ago, there was a company that had started up and they were selling what they called portable wall hangers. And wouldn't you believe it, the portable wall hanger is a Yankee Boogle with a bracket screwed to it. So he's selling, of course, you know, illegal machine guns with a bracket screwed onto them as if they're made for hanging up a coat. Because, you know, given the shape of them, you can hang a coat off of them. Only they're made to, like, not do that. And, of course, this was really weird because, you know, we saw him doing this and then noticed, you know, we found the location of his LLC. And he's literally in the same fenced-in parking lot as an FBI field office. And so we were like, oh, yeah, sure. You definitely aren't the feds, Mr. Coat Hanger Salesman. But it turns out he wasn't the feds because he just recently got arrested for doing this. Oh. He'd sold over 400 of these devices to people. So, you know, 400 illegal machine guns that he sold this way. And, you know, the FBI criminal complaint that they wrote about him was hilarious. It's a great read because it includes some of the conversations that he had with customers where they're like acting dumb, like asking like, how many coats could I hang off of this coat hanger before it wears out? Of course, that being code implied for, you know, how many rounds can I shoot through this machine gun before this plastic part wears out? So I, you know, it was hilarious to sort of see that and sort of like, you know, because in criminal complaints, the cops have to spell out what they think people are saying and thinking in electronic communications. Mm-hmm. So it was funny to see the cop like try and explain like, well, this is slang that's generally used to describe, you know, shooting guns quickly or making machine guns, or they, you know, constantly reference the Boog, which is like a silly old dumb meme about the government will come for our guns and we'll start a second civil war or whatever, which is, this is at this point.
Is this the boogie down thing that I've heard about?
The Boogaloo. Yes.
Boogaloo. Boogie down, whatever.
It started as like a really bad joke about like, haha, the second civil war will come when you come after our guns. But of course, like every good joke, someone has to like take it way too seriously. And so people decided like, yes, I'm actually going to go and take on the government. And I think that sort of hit its peak with, I forget the guy's name. I think his name, I don't want to get his name wrong and then say it out loud, but there was a guy who, you know, this does still all tie in. So there was a guy who took a 3D, or not 3D printed, something was 3D printed, we'll get to that. But he took an AR-9 during one of the nights of the great big protest across the country, and he shot a security guard with a fully automatic AR-9, which is an AR-15 and 9mm. Shot and killed him. I think he may have killed someone else. And then I don't know if he wrote it. I think he ended up getting shot and then wrote in his own blood, like Boog on the hood of his car. Ooh. After getting shot.
When was
so,
this?
Like he obviously, just recently. So just a couple months ago.
Is this the guy with the flak jacket?
During the riots.
Yeah. During the riots.
And okay.
Again, I don't want to have his name wrong.
Gotcha.
So I don't want to like say someone else's name and have it wrong.
Okay.
But of course, if you Google, Boog Boy Shoots Cop, it was like he did a drive-by shooting and shot a security guard instead of a police officer. But he was using, well, at least it's alleged, he had bought a portable wall hanger from our portable wall hanger friend. So there's at least some chance that this fully automatic AR-9 that he used was fully automatic because he had the portable wall hanger in it. So now our buddy, who actually wasn't a Fed, who was selling illegal machine guns, now may have had his machine gun featured in a fairly high profile shooting, which is, you know, great for him. And I'm sure he totally won't be getting the book thrown at him as a result of this.
Right.
But that was sort of like, in my mind, that was like the peak of Boog jokes. Like, past that point, Boog jokes like quit being funny, because not only, you know, they had already been ruined by people taking it seriously, and now there's someone acting on taking it seriously. So it's no longer funny. It's now like, oh Jesus, mm-hmm. people are shooting security guards who aren't cops. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys, let's talk about philosophy for a second. You guys all sound like anarchists. Do you identify as such? Alex, let's start with you.
No, I think I'm still holding on to that minarchist title.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because I had this discussion with some libertarian friends who were like, "Well, you only spend like 3 months as a minarchist before you're just full on anarchist, let's burn it all down." But like, I'm still holding on to that, because I kind of believe that once we burn it all down, we'll come back to the sort of tribal state of like really small government, which is almost perfect, where like the judicial system exists to settle disputes between individuals. And like the sort of enforcement system behind that goes to execute the resolution of those disputes. Anything beyond that is kind of just junk, and we burn it. So I still think I'm holding on to that minarchist idea.
Okay. And Jeff?
I've called myself a libertarian anarchist in the past. My favorite book for that would be like Gerard Casey's Libertarian Anarchy book. Which is kind of takes this kind of what he would say is like the Rothbardian view of, you know, they're a gang, and you know, we're pretty much who they're raiding, right? We're the valley people that they're coming down to raid. These days, I call myself, I don't, you know, words and labels and all that, right? So these days, I just call myself leave me alone or elsist.
Leave me alone or elsist. Okay, new ideology that you've invented. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Ivan, anarchist or no?
I don't know. So I guess I'm going to answer this one sort of hypothetically. So if government is to exist, I think that the biggest government that there should be, in terms of like the say they have over your life, should be local level. And that shouldn't be bigger than like groups of maybe 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. Cities shouldn't be a thing at all. Cities only exist to like abuse people's rights.
Whoa.
And are the highest concentrations of people's rights being abused only ever happens in cities.
Wow.
And I think almost all problems that people have with this political system or any political system is that individuals who know nothing about you or the way that you live or what it's like to live where you live even end up being elected to make decisions about how it is that you get to live where you live. None of my elective representatives know anything about what it's like to live where I live. They all live in like cities bigger than, you know, 60, 70,000 people. Mm-hmm. I live in a much smaller place. I live sort of secluded away from people, and I tend to want to keep to myself. He's got like 100 next door neighbors. He probably doesn't know all of his neighbors. I know all of, you know, I know all my neighbors for like 20 miles around, and it's like maybe 10, 15 people. So like, I think so many of the problems that government ends up having is how can they possibly rule or make laws or vote at whatever bodies they go to vote on in my best interest if they know nothing about me, they know nothing about my interest, they know nothing about the way of my life. Mm-hmm. And how can we assume that it's a fair system for him and all of his 100 neighbors to have a greater say over me and all of my neighbors' ways that we live our own way on our own property, on our own time, the way we want to peacefully amongst one another? So I think the whole world would be a much better place if local government was the biggest there was, and federal government can exist to sort of like allocate resources in times of crisis, such as in like natural disasters. But federal government shouldn't be able to tell you how you live, because, you know, of course, living in Illinois, I've got one senator who comes from like Springfield and one who comes from Chicago, neither of which are anything like where I live here. In fact, they've probably never really seen the countryside, and they consider everything south of Springfield to be like the dumb Illinois and everything up top to be, you know, the rich and sophisticated Illinois. Mm-hmm. So like, they probably don't even think very highly of us country folk down here. So I don't understand how we could ever arrive at a fair or an equitable way of treating one another when they're the ones in charge of making decisions about the way that people who are totally different from them live.
Okay. Radical decentralist, localist, maybe, is how you might describe
yourself. Sure.
Okay, cool.
That works.
Guys, this has been amazing. So advertise yourselves. Tell us, let's go around the horn again, just say the names and URLs or whatever you want for your websites, your Twitter. Go for it, Alex. You're up.
I'm Control Q. You can find me at controlq.com. There's a banner on the top of my site. You can find me everywhere else on the internet through that. We do guides and how-tos and sort of helpful tips every now and again. Yeah, come by, check it out.
Cool. Yeah, Control Pew is CTRLPEW. Yep. Jeff.
Oh, also, the short link is the short link is theguide.controlpew.com. If you want to go straight into the Getting Started guide, go there first, buy the printer, get started.
Awesome. Cool. Jeff.
Yeah, the website's liberator12k.com. Right now, there's lots of links on there, all sorts of stuff that's fun to very serious. That's probably the place to go. You can find me the rest of the way from there. I got my Twitter down there. I got links to email files, all that jazz.
Liberator12k.com.
Correct. Right?
Cool. Ivan,
yep.
Where are you? Where can we find you?
Oh, geez. So my website is not something that you can like say out loud and be able to find your way anywhere from it. So okay. I guess I'll start by saying I'm on Twitter for now. I've managed to go like a whole year without getting kicked off of Twitter, which is like a new high score. Mm. And I'm on Twitter and my handle is Ivan_is_back. And that is back is by no means an admission to the fact that I'm back after being banned. I guess easiest way to find, you know, my website is it's linked in my bio there on Twitter. Although if you just like type into Google Ivan the Troll, it's somewhere in the top page of results. It used to be the first result, and then there was like some bad press about 3D printed guns, and then mysteriously when you typed in Ivan the Troll, the link to the files like fell to the bottom of the first page. And I have no idea why that would happen. Mm. Except like your overlords aren't like a fan of you knowing about that.
You're although like the Pirate Bay.
Right. They intentionally try to hide, you know, intentionally deboost stuff, because when you used to type in Ivan the Troll, it used to all be files, and then increasingly it's harder and harder to find files when typing that in. But yeah, if you type in Ivan the Troll, find me on Twitter, whatever, it's linked in my bio, at least for now.
Great. Okay, so next time you see me, guys, I'll have a pink rocket launcher, and you're gonna teach me how to use it. I really appreciate all three of you coming on. This has been very informative. I know the audience is gonna love it, and I guess just keep doing what you're doing. I mean, I got to say, I'm still a little nervous about this whole thing, but I like it. I like especially what it means politically. You are almost single-handedly subverting the state's legitimate monopoly on violence, which is possibly the most revolutionary thing you can do, for better or worse, depending on your point of view of this, you know, vis-a-vis the state, right? This is as revolutionary as it gets, as I told Cody Wilson several months ago. So thanks again, and I hope to see you around soon.
Thank you.
Thanks absolutely for having us.
All right, guys. This is the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. To join the new Renegade University, go to renegadeuniversity.com. To join the new Unregistered Underground, the supporting listeners group for the podcast, go to unregisteredunderground.com. Thanks for listening.